Hello, my name is Kimo Oberlo, and I am one of the senseis with Structured Lean. This is episode 3 of Life's Lessons Learned, and we are talking about the life and times of our master sensei, Mr. Roy Nakaue. Roy has been in the Toyota production system for over 40 years. Started in the United States, in Japan, but then also globally. Welcome, Roy.
Thank you, Kimo. Thanks for having me at the podcast.
It's great to have you here again today. Thank you very much. Throughout this time period, Roy would learn and apply principles and methods that are associated with the Toyota production system. Much of these learnings are applied through his business relationships and apply to his business dealings. But the distinction between his business life and his personal life is blurred as he applies these principles throughout both. And as we talk about this legacy that Roy has created, we will address these concepts and how he has applied them in his approach to life, whether it be in business or whether it be personal. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the 80s, specifically his practical application period. Before I turn it over to Roy, though, I just a couple quick reminders of where we are. So during the 70s, Roy joined the Toyota Group through Nippon Denso, where he was part of the team that was starting to source local components for the Toyota production plants that were in the process of coming to the United States. First as the joint venture with General Motors that was known as NUMMI, which happened in 1984, and then by themselves in terms of the Toyota Motor Manufacturing in Georgetown, Kentucky, which happened in 1988. So today we will be talking with Roy about how he went about bringing these North American suppliers up to the high quality standards that are required to be a supplier to Toyota. So, Roy, where do you plan on taking us today?
Kimo, we will begin by what I call the 1980s is my practical applications era. So in continuing with my story, starting with the lessons learned from Dr. Ishibaru, and then going into the what I call the first with the implementing the strategy for the North America Supplier Association and stabilizing the supply chain for the purpose of setting up the manufacturing plants for Toyota in the North America launch. We first start with NUMMI, and as you know, and then later we went to Georgetown, Kentucky, and you are well aware of these two stories. First, with NUMMI was the introduction of the TPS manufacturing. This is for the OEM suppliers and creating a North America TPS training center for the tier 1, 2, and 3 suppliers. And so here we started out with what we call GAMA, GAMA. And then in Georgetown, as you know, you had your own version of GAMA, the NU GAMA.
Yeah, so what you're talking about in Georgetown was TSSC, I believe. If I'm getting this correctly, it's the Toyota Supplier Support Center, and then they put on North America. That's what you're referring to, correct?
Exactly,
that type
correct.
Of relationship.
That's correct. That's what we're talking about. So when we discuss this, we're talking about this, it's all related to suppliers and how do you bring them into the Toyota organization as suppliers that can provide with the type of TPS activities that are going to be implemented by the car plants and the component manufacturers, both.
Okay, so wait, let me interrupt real quick.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about you're going to bring the suppliers into the TPS system, you're going to teach them about the Toyota production system and how Toyota does that business. And you expect the suppliers to follow you with this, right? Because they're probably not used to working in such a manner with the manufacturing company.
That is correct. As you know, with the automotive big three of North America, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler, the suppliers just deliver parts on a monthly basis in big bulk, and were able to transfer everything that they had made, whether it's over than the volume that was required. And there was no strict structure that they had to follow. And then the quality was also the same. So when we first started, like, for example, with NUMMI, with Gamma, we had to start out with training them first on the basic TPS things. So what is standardized work? How do you use this, you know, for your own production? How do you use the GIS standards, the Japan industry standards, et cetera, and apply that into your own production? And then later on, as things went on from there, and you know this, we then started to then talk about, you know, a little bit more into details, like what exactly are we looking for? How do you apply all this? So the Gamma Association was the first time that the suppliers actually got to see how a Toyota operations work, especially with NUMMI, which is the joint venture between Toyota and General Motors, which is a different approach than what General Motors had.
Yes, and so I'm aware, like in the beginning when we first started that with General Motors had a plant in Northern California, which they actually had shut down, and then Toyota came in and started this joint venture. And when that happened, was that you? I mean, you were actually previous to that, where you were starting to lay the groundwork in the supplier base, or what would be the supplier base, to ultimately NUMMI and Toyota Georgetown.
Yes, that's correct. So we started with the suppliers first, because we had to create that base for the car plants, because, as you know, without the suppliers being able to do the things that the car plant requires, there was no way that we could have the car plant set up. Similar to the way they do it in Japan. And so even with NUMMI, they had a labor union at that time, very strong, powerful union. But we worked with the people there. We worked with the union people. We worked with the workers on the line. And step by step, they started to understand this. We brought the suppliers in so they could help and with them as well. And these are the same suppliers that I told you in the 70s we developed. So they had the basic understanding and training on TPS. And so it was now bringing them all together in order to support the car plants.
Okay, so I see. So we were trying to get the supply base to, one, think in a different manner.
Right.
To introduce the Toyota production system methodologies into them. Mm-hmm. And if I'm correct with what Gamma was basically, like we have talked about it before, and I know it's not the same thing when I say Keiritsu, mm-hmm. but it is going in that direction where you have a family of suppliers that work together for the benefit of both companies.
That is correct. And when we talk about this, we're talking about using the Japan industry standard. We call this the JIS standards.
Yes.
Okay. As you know, and not the SAE standards. And so there was higher requirements as well. And what this meant was that to bring the suppliers together, tier one, two, and three, and even four, and twice a year, come to the car plants, discuss, present their progress of what they have done, share their results with other suppliers, as well as with the Toyota car plant people, and learn from each other. We call it Jishuken. And also to be recognized as the best supplier so that they in turn could teach new potential suppliers of the Toyota way. This was very important for us to understand the Toyota way.
Yes, and one of the things that you always talk about is the, and I think you find it one of the very important aspects of the Toyota production system. And it's not all of the methodologies that you apply, but it's how you work with people.
That is correct. And so it is a matter of coming together, sharing what you learn, being able to transfer knowledge, being able to transfer your own experiences, what was successful and why, what was a failure and why. And each of these suppliers were given the forum to the plant to share all that they have done. show what they have done, and then others could see this as well. So it's just like, you know, learn by doing, but more importantly, it was also bringing them together to become a stronger working group and team.
So we've talked before about Jishiken, and it means learn by doing. So for those of you out there that think Jishiken, what's that? This is precisely what that means, is it's learn by doing. And so what Roy is talking about is taking this group of suppliers, bringing them together, teaching them concepts, having them go back and apply those concepts, and then coming back together and sharing with other companies the things that they did, what they learned, and not to hide your failures, not to celebrate your failures, but not to hide your failures, but to bring them out to light so everybody can learn from them.
Yeah. So this is the idea behind that. And then, so now we're going to the 80s, and here you could see that from the basics now, we start talking about, as an example, let's just use Modine, which we started in the 70s. And now we go into the 80s, and here now with the car plants in place, both at NUMMI and at Georgetown, we're talking about a new way of doing business, a new concept of TPS. And so we started to introduce to them EDI, for example, the delivery system from production control for daily shipments. Then to go from daily shipments to hourly shipments directly to the car assembly line. We talked about milk runs. How do you do the milk runs? How do you combine several close together suppliers to use the same transport to make use for better cost and efficiency? And then we started to change that and say, okay, now level two would be now look at smaller box sizes. How do you change the box size? How do you go to returnable containers? How do you make it so that you can share the same boxes with other suppliers as well? And then you start to look at cross-docking. And these are, as you know, are all concepts and ideas that come from TPS, but more importantly, it comes, Kimo, from the production control and the role that the production control department starts to play with the suppliers.
Okay,
here, so I think you can share some of that, yeah?
I was going to say, let me interrupt because let me go back and do some quick clarification on some of the terms that you used. Okay, so a lot of people don't understand these. So like when we talk about milk runs, we're not talking about going around and picking up cow's milk or something like that. What we talk about is picking up from multiple suppliers in the same hour so that you are not sending full truckloads. You are sending a whole bunch of little partial truckloads that add up to a full truckload, but they are collected. Every hour on the hour, you're sending an hour's worth of production. And that's where small box quantities come into play, because you want things to take up less space. Cross-docking allows people to send something, like, so there was a large base of suppliers in Michigan, in the Detroit area. And so we had a cross-dock up there. They would collect same concept of milk runs every hour on the hour or every 2 hours, bring them back to the cross dock. They would then put them all together and ship them on one truck down to Georgetown so that you get deliveries very frequently. And you're right about, you know, production control in Toyota. The production aspect of things is the most important thing in the plant. It's about making sure that you have good, stable production and using these concepts in order to accelerate the product, you could say. And so one would come off every minute there. And you're not bringing them off any faster, but you are increasing the velocity with which things pass through the plant.
That's correct. So if you were to look at the Toyota house, yeah, as you can see in the early 70s, with the suppliers, we started out with the basics, yeah, teaching them the foundation of TPS, you know, the tools such as 5S, standardized work, TPM, so to stabilize their production. And then the first pillar on the right side of the house is the quality pillar. So how do you put in quality built in? How do you get it so that you can do it in the right way with the lowest cost? And once yes. those first two steps were in place, now in the 80s, we can then go and say, okay, now let's look at the logistics side of it, or the just-in-time or just-in-sequence. And I think you can explain a little bit more, what does that mean, just-in-time and just-in-sequence?
Yes, you know? Yes. And so, you know, sometimes we talk in acronyms. And so just-in-time being JIT, and it is having components arrive to the place that they are needed just in time. Now, just in time can be relative to how you define it. And so just in time could be within an hour of when it's needed. It could be within a couple hours of when it's needed, but I would keep it down to even minutes. So on the North American side of the house, we did have 4 hours of inventory, but there was only an hour of inventory line side. And that's when it came in containers. However, the other aspect of things is just in sequence. And so you have to communicate to your suppliers what you are building, and then they send it over just in sequence and in the sequence that it's going to be made. And so things like seats that had a lot of variability to them would be made at a supplier a short distance away, put onto the truck, and then sent to the line in the sequence that they are going to be used. So the operators did not have to pick a part. They just grabbed the next one.
Mm-hmm. And so it is, how do you create the supply chain to be part of your production line? That was the whole idea behind all of this. And Kimo, as you can see, this is in the 80s now. And so, you know, these are the same parts manufacturers who are supplying to General Motors and Ford and Chrysler. And so when we start using these idioms or terms, as you call it, they had no clue what the hell we're talking about, right? I mean, how did you struggle with this?
Oh,
did you?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I post Toyota, I have been into a lot of companies that do struggle significantly with a lot of the things that we talk about. And Toyota's system was such that everything acted as one, I guess you can say. And that's kind of what the Toyota production system is all about. It's not all these little components. It's really one system.
Yeah. Okay. So now we get them going this way. Yeah. And now they start to get used to all of this. They're very comfortable now. They realize that this can be done, which is a totally new way of doing things for them.
Yes.
And so now we come into the point where now we says, okay, now we're ready to go to the next step. And they all look at us like, what are you talking about? Next step. We're already at the highest level. And we says, no, because now we're going to create a supplier park inside the car plant location, like in Georgetown, Kentucky. And we want you to have your own small building that we're going to rent to you. And we want you to start to make shipments on an hour-by-hour basis directly to the line itself. And you know this. So tell us about your experience on this.
Yeah? Well, they definitely, you know, a lot of as they were building the plant, a lot of the suppliers that were going to produce like that were had to locate close and like almost across the street or very close or in the facility itself in some instances in order to really reduce the amount of inventory and the lead time that was required.
Yeah. And so tell us about the role of the production control for this when you were there.
Yes. Well, so we kind of oversaw everything. And so production control was one of the, I would say, but maybe I am partial because that's where I came up through, but I would say that it is one of the strongest departments, and they oversaw everything that was going on. The parts flow as it came in and the establishment of these relationships with many of the suppliers came through production control. And it was a matter of, you know, how they scheduled, how the plant ran, and being also a liaison. So knowing everything that went on. You know, it seems like in more traditional manufacturing systems that I have been in, it's not always the strongest department in the plant. They kind of follow and I would almost say cower to manufacturing, but at Toyota, they are the ones that command everything.
Yeah. So as you can see now in the 80s, what today is, I guess I call it industry standards for all car manufacturers and automotive companies.
They weren't then.
They weren't then. You know, yeah. What I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. And so with what you did in the 80s, because I did get there in at the right after the startup, but as you were coming through the 80s and you were making these contacts and developing these relationships. And so now I am kind of turning the subject a little bit to the relationships that you had with some of these, the companies that you were working with to bring up to speed. And how do you apply the things that you talk about into those relationships as they form?
Well, you know, again, Kimball, it's a critical thing to understand here is that in order to create the relationship, you have to have key executives that have open-mindedness and are willing to try new ideas and understand that it's a new way of doing business. But more importantly, it's also the future for them as well. And so it was, you know, just be able to improve the relationship that we just started with the tier 1, 2, and 3 supply chain. And then we would take them to Japan for learning. Sometimes we'd take them to Georgetown for learning or NUMMI, or sometimes to our own factories as well, and fine tune their roles inside the association. And so, go ahead, what were you going to say?
So who are some of these key executives? Because I believe in the way that you have talked with me in the past is you did have a strong influence over them, but also they had a strong influence over you.
That's correct. So names that come to mind, for example, John Pewson, Bob Page, Don Johnson, I already told you about, yes. Fred Sincock, Harvey Sorensen, and there are many others. These are all Americans from the Midwest and the southeastern part of the United States. And we would take them with us to the plant so they could see their own products, how it's used in the final assembly lines. And it was eye-opening for them because not only were they seeing how their products were being used, but they would see how it was joined together with other products that come together. And what was the final assembly line and some of the problems that was caused at the final assembly line. So they would start to understand more and more that how to make it easier, how to make it better, how to make it more efficient. And then if you do things in small steps, you can improve your Kaizen activities faster. And they start to see and do this by themselves. We also had learning workshops as well for them. We call Learn by Doing. And they began to understand more. And so this is the start of how it got. And without these people, we wouldn't have been successful. So again, you need to create personal relationships as well as professional relationships.
Yeah, you know, I've always been a firm believer in the concepts that you are talking about, and which is learn by doing. And but also you talk about taking all of these suppliers to the OEM to see how their products get used.
Yeah, you remember now, a lot of these executives, these are all like top-level executives at headquarters. They only visit the plants, maybe their own plants, perhaps maybe once a month or maybe once a quarter. Yeah. And as far as they were concerned, all they went to the plant was just to listen to the presentations by the plant managers of the results. That's all. They never went to the shop floor. They never went to talk to the people on the line.
They never saw the details.
They never saw the details. And so it was totally eye-opening for them how even a Mr. Cho would go to the line 2-3 times a day to talk to the people. And they were surprised to see me do the same thing. in our own plans. And he says, you know a lot more people. And then we always shared with them. There's an old saying that we use. We say that when you walk the shop floor, 1,000 eyes will follow you. You can be visible or you could be invisible. Which one do you want to be?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because everybody's watching when you walk the shop floor.
Right. And so, you know, again, and how do you bring this again to a personal relationship? Again, the same people that are names I gave you, they became friends.
Yes.
And for example, Bob Page, you know, he lived in Cleveland, Ohio, Parker Hannifin. And so he invited me to the Cleveland Browns football game in the winter. I froze my ass off. But it was exciting times.
Yeah.
You know, it's different, as you know.
Well, you know, that California boy to Cleveland, Ohio in the wintertime.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Definitely a weather shock. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And Fred Sincock, he lived in Plymouth, Michigan, and he took me ice fishing. He had a small place up in the Upper Peninsula of Lake Michigan. Nice. And then later on, I took my two kids with me to see that place and had a good time. The kids were very young, but, to share my memories. John Pusin, Libertyville, Illinois, he's a Chicago hometown boy, and so he told me how the Chicago Bears are a big part of the city culture. And okay,
I have to ask a question because what we hear here is Cleveland, Ohio, Plymouth, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois. And I've been to Chicago in the wintertime and it's cold. And you talk about ice fishing and then you talk about going to the Cleveland Browns game right off of the lake. They get that lake effect winter out there. And you couldn't find any suppliers in the South?
Well, yes, we had suppliers in Clinton, Tennessee, as you know. So there was the first time I tasted the country ham. I went to Cracker Barrel. Remember Cracker Barrel?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, great restaurant. Yeah.
And still remember Cracker Barrel. And
exactly.
Frequent it often.
Yeah. And so then I was in Batesville, Mississippi. The first time I saw cotton fields, I couldn't believe it. I was actually, being able to see that. And so then I went to South Carolina, and there was interesting because I knew Mike Mansueti at that time. He's a good friend of mine from Bosch. He's a big Clemson Tigers guy. And so he invited me there to see the valley that the football game is played.
Yes.
And also was interesting because, again, you share all these personal stories with them. But more importantly than that is that as many of these people, became helpful for me in my own career, because of them, I was able to get promotions to a senior level vice president in the 80s and then later on to a executive level vice president in the 90s. And I still continue the relationships. Many of them have passed away because a lot of them were 20 years older than I was. I was a young pup at that time, and many of them were in their middle management and senior management level. But even today, Fred's son, Bradford, lives in Indonesia. We stay in touch. Bob's daughter owns Mielo's, which is an Italian restaurant that she and her husband, he's a Michelin chef in Cleveland, Ohio. They have a restaurant. We stay in touch. So yeah, it's personal, and yet at the same time, it continues, you know?
You may have to give me the address of the one who's in Cleveland, Ohio, because, currently I'm living East Coast, and for us, anything on the other side of the Rockies is considered East Coast. But I do recall quite a few times as I relocated from the West Coast, the things that you see out here are significantly different, but the relationships that you formed with those people are very special.
Yeah. For me, it's always been a learning about people, culture, society, and it doesn't matter whether you're in the West Coast of the US or the East Coast or the Midwest, or even if you go to Europe, to Germany. As you know, I do the same thing when I go to Volkswagen, or to Audi, when I go to Wolfsburg, you know, the people I met there from the Volkswagen group, they took me to various places. I went to the Harsh Mountains for Christmas goose dinner. Never had that before, and it was interesting to actually go with the team, the Volkswagen engineers, to purchase a goose. Did you know that? We did that. No. We did that in March, and we all chipped in. We each gave €5, and this farmer would raise this goose, and he would prepare it for Christmas dinner. And so Then comes December the 6th. Every year, I would go there on week 49 for the review with the Volkswagen people on the TPS program that they did. And then on a Wednesday evening, we all left the plant at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon because we're going to the Harsh Mountains to this farming house. And the farmer and his wife would prepare the goose dinner for us. And we would sit there for 4 hours eating and drinking.
Wow, that is such a special thing. Well, I do remember many instances as we have been together and worked together with the people that you've met, and how they were all good, close acquaintances, but you would still apply the same thing. It's just amazing. You know, I remember you talking to Philip about developing his own A3, and not for business, but for life in general, and how it crosses over in order to, you think the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, again, it's the same thing. I share these lessons of life with old friends and new friends over the years. People like the Tom Mulhollands, the Greg Kimmins, the Mike Burks, the Loan Pappas. These are people who work for me at Denso. They later on went on to Mitsubishi, but we stay in touch. And even today, they help me. Whenever I have a question or have people that want to see what they're doing, they're always willing to share with them as well. And so, we just keep it that way. Yeah,
there's no doubt that you, over your life and the legacies, as we're talking about, that you have left, have touched a lot of people. And that's really incredible. But, you know, I could, you and I can go on talking about this for a long time, but time is starting to get short and we need to wrap up this episode. So if you could, Roy, give me some closing comments.
Well, Kimo, as you know, we started in the 80s. And like I said, this was my doing period. And what was done then has now become standards for the automotive industry. And it revolutionized how to become more lean and constantly evolving as the world changes. As you know, nothing stays the same. And so my advice to the audience and to you is that whenever you're going to use concepts into practical applications, always consider your audience and learn by doing. Use PDCA, and you have this, and focus on the C and the A so that you are practical in your approach. And reflect on what you do for your small steps first. Don't worry about whether you have a perfect plan or not. It's not that important. The important thing is to start to do things. Do not wait, and help them as they go, step by step. So, you know, the idea is, again, to make it practical and just try. You will never learn. You never know unless you try. So that's my suggestion.
Thank you so much, Roy.
Thanks, Kimo.
You know, I appreciate the time that you and I have together. It is truly, I think about this because my statement was going to be, it's all about trying. But then, you know, you can think about how trying it is to be with some people. But I truly love being with you and talking to you. And in general, what we're talking about is trying, you know, try. Don't just talk about it. Try it. And so, during our next episode, we're going to move on. We're going to get into the 90s and early 2000s. Roy is now going to be an executive VP and a member of the board of Denso, where he continues to influence others in the ways of the Toyota production system and how well they apply to business and how well they apply to life. You can find further episodes and also more information about many of the concepts that we have talked about here at our website. So until next time, I bid you farewell and thank you for listening.